Never Seen Ned by T. Mitchell Adams. The microwave hummed, the timer counting down to zero, 60 seconds to go. Ned Baxter glanced at the young lady behind the register. She was watching me. It didn't look like she thought I was attractive or anything. No, this look was fearful. It said, "You're going to steal that burrito, hit on me, rob me, or do something worse, you 30-something pervert." I looked away, 20 seconds to go. The lights flickered overhead. I looked up at them and then back at the tan cashier who watched me apprehensively. With an audible ding, the microwave merrily announced my food was ready. I reached for the burrito with a napkin-covered hand while holding a flimsy cup of soda in the other as I went to the register. I half expected the girl to scream at my approach. I felt somewhat guilty, but I had no reason to. I didn't leer at her or anything. No, nothing like that. And yes, she acted as though I had the word predator stamped in red on my forehead. That'll be $59.30. She stared at me without friendliness, courtesy, or hospitality. Though I hated the things, I wished for one of those self-checkout registers that were popping up in larger grocery chains. I'd always disliked them. They cut jobs, making the customer do all the work, all in the guise of saving time, but really just overflowing some executive's fat wallet with more profit. I reached in my pocket and produced a dwindling wad of cash. I handed her $3.20 and winced as blue dryer lint fell onto the countertop. She took the money without emotion and handed me the change, being careful not to touch my hand. I pocketed the money, picked up my burrito, awkwardly took the cup of Coke, and bumped the door open with my elbow. A welcome gust of fresh night air met me, and shuffled the contents of the rack of newspapers just inside the door. I felt the weight of the cashier's stare as I left and walked across the parking lot to the gas pumps and to my car. She'd probably watched the embers of my vehicle's taillights vanish into the night before going on to read some celebrity tabloid. I reached the car, almost spilling the soda while opening the car door, and placed the Coke on the roof. After topping off the tank, I replaced the gas nozzle, screwed on the gas cap, and shut the flap. I turned to get in the car and found myself face to face with the cashier, her dark eyes searching mine. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw her hand lift and come up. I imagined her pulling a knife and almost panicked. "Phone call for you." My terror changed to bewilderment. "For me?" Her expression said, "Take the phone, stupid." She still held it up to me. "It's for you." "Me? Impossible. No one knows I'm here." I took the phone as she stepped away. I expected it to be her boyfriend threatening me for something I hadn't done. "Hello?" The connection was bad, yet I could make out the voice on the other end of the line. "Turn around, Ned. Don't come here." "Who is this?" I demanded. Don't come where? Ned, I can't do this again. Can't do what? I said. Call me again? There was growing static on the line. Then, as clear as day, a pleasant feminine voice said, "You are not authorized." I almost spoke to her when she repeated, "You are not authorized." It was a pre-recorded message. The line went dead. As I lowered the phone, the girl returned. I handed it to her. "Everything all right, mister?" "Yes, fine." "Okay, drive safe then." She turned and walked away. I got into my car, the soda forgotten and rolled off the top of the vehicle as I drove away. I tried to think who the caller could be. I'd paid cash, not using a credit card, because cash never knows your name. So it wasn't a prank by the cashier, because she didn't know who I was. No one knew I was making this drive except for Stella, but she had no way of knowing what time I'd left home. It just didn't make sense. Soon, the neon lights of Smitty's One Stop were behind me and out of sight. An eerie feeling washed over me. There was something familiar about that voice, but I couldn't place it. I turned on the radio and got static, but it differed from that on the phone. I pushed the search button. The only thing found was a country music station where a whiskey-voiced singer belted out a sappy tune about losing his wife to another man. Now he was drinking her memory away. I switched off the nonsense. Instantly, I heard the sound of the tires hitting the seams in the pavement. Rhythmatic and beckoning sleep. I opened the window for fresh air. Cool night air washed over me as I took in deep breaths. The half-eaten burrito lay beside me, my cross-country companion. The headlights searched the darkness and lit a sign. The message read, "Turn back now, Ned, 37 miles." It hadn't fully registered what the sign said until I passed it, but my mind belatedly relayed the message. I stomped on the brake pedal hard, the car swerving as a sudden screech of tires sent a warning sound into the night. Coming to a stop, the smell of melted rubber and white smoke drifted past the hood of the car. I shifted into reverse. It seemed to take forever to get back to the sign. Mockingly, it seemed to grow larger, and then, as I was back at the front of the sign, it read, "Marietta, 37 miles." Lights crested the hill behind my car as an 18-wheeler bore down on the small silhouette of my vehicle. The driver of the big rig swerved just in time to miss a disastrous collision in which my vehicle would have undoubtedly come out looking like a crumpled Coke can. The gust of wind from the truck's passing rocked my vehicle. The truck's horn blared angrily into the darkness. Ned cursed his own stupidity in leaving his car on the roadway and was sure the other driver was doing the same. I put my car in drive and pushed the gas pedal. The car lurched forward. I hadn't gone far off in the black distance of the night before seeing the lights of a state trooper's roadblock. When I got close enough to stop, I was puzzled. Something seemed wrong, but what? Then I realized the trooper's car looked wrong, oddly outdated, with a single red dome on the roof. I stepped on the brakes and gently rolled to a stop. Trooper Willie Meeks watched the car approach. Then he walked up to the driver's side door. The window was down. "Sir, we've had a bad wreck up ahead. You'll have to take a detour. Take the Marietta exit, turn back east on 32 until you reach Highway 77, then turn south. It runs parallel to the interstate. You can get back on at Thackerville, and that'll get you past the mess we've got up ahead." Ned thanked the officer for the directions. "I hope no one is seriously hurt." The trooper stood closed-mouthed and gestured to the exit. He watched as Ned put his car in drive and then took the exit. "Oh, you're welcome, Ned Baxter," he said to himself. Back in his patrol car, his lights flashing, siren howling as he shot down the interstate, his car vanished into nothingness with a blinding flash of light, and the night was silent once more. I'd followed the trooper's directions, and when I turned onto Highway 77, the road seemed to become everything, and yet nothing. The night closed in about me, the thoroughfare becoming larger. This was not a trip I'd wanted to make, and if not for Stella, I wouldn't have. She'd been at the airport waiting to board a plane for home, but then she'd felt an overwhelming sense that the plane was going to crash and kill them all. "Did you tell anyone else they were about to die?" I'd ask. "No, silly. That would have been too embarrassing," Stella said. I could see her flaming red hair shaking with agitation because she had to explain it to me. Then she started in with that familiar childish voice nagging me to come get her. We'd been married for 5 years. The marriage produced little happiness, no children, and a lot of bitterness. "She acts like such a child," I said to myself, looking at the reflection in the rearview mirror. The eyes that looked back at me were haunted, angry, and hurt. We didn't speak of divorce, but whispered of things more sinister, more permanent, and darker. The words were murderous. I looked back at the road and was startled. I jabbed my foot at the brakes and almost missed the pedal. I was in the thickest fog I'd ever seen. The headlights illuminated nothing but mist. I felt the passenger side of the car go off the road and corrected slightly. The brake pedal seemed to be sticking. The steering wheel was hard to turn. "It's dead," taunted a voice from somewhere in my mind. The car coasted to a stop, the lights still on, showing me nothing. Suddenly, the lights went dim in a fleeting glow of soft orange. Then they were gone. I was completely in darkness, feeling the fog against my cheeks, hands, and arms. It tingled on my exposed flesh. Panic set in. I imagined another 18-wheeler closing in on me and my car. Desperately, I searched for the keys. Nothing. They were gone. It was as though a corrosive element in the fog had eaten them. My heart raced and chest tightened. "What's happening?" I said aloud. I felt for the keys on the floor mat, finding nothing. In the seat next to me, I felt for the keys and only managed to squash my cross-country companion, getting bean and cheese all over my hand. I opened the car door and got out, leaving the door open. I'd taken maybe 10 or 15 steps when I remembered my cell phone still in the car. I turned to get it, but the fog was so thick, I was unable to see the car I'd just left. My mind told me everything was fine because I was still on the road, and I'd find my car easily. I walked back in the direction of the car, but it was gone. The little voice returned, saying, "You're fine, Ned." "Ned, no you're not. You're losing your mind, Ned." "Ned, where is your car?" I turned back after 20 steps, this time walking a zigzag pattern, and still my car did not appear. The fog was an impenetrable mass, and I almost lost all sense of direction. Nevertheless, I was still on the road, and I felt certain that I would find a town soon if I kept going and stayed on the road. And if I didn't get completely discombobulated in this hellish fog, I reassured myself and found comfort by the sound of my shoes on the pavement. At the same time Ned Baxter's car became stranded, Sue Kraft emerged from the swinging metal doors. The lights of Billings Pharmacy came on, both inside and out. The sudden brilliance of light washed over the street and immediately cast inky shadows in the crevices. Along Main Street, lamps lit up as though the town were waking up. Billings Pharmacy was no longer a pharmacy, but had long ago been converted into a diner. Sue had never bothered to rename it because her daddy had been Tom Billings, the former owner. When he passed away, the people in Redbud Springs stopped getting sick altogether. Funny, people never thought about that. "Poor daddy's lost forever," Sue said. "It is so strange he never came back. It's all part of the sacrifice one will make for the whole of society." As Sue passed the coffee pot, she leisurely pushed the switch, which became red under her fingertip. Next, she opened the pie case, its spring-loaded door clicking audibly. She reached in and withdrew a pie, and then, setting it carefully on the countertop, yet not knowing what kind of pie it was, Sue liked to be surprised. With a long knife, she cut one generous piece and slid it onto a plate. She exclaimed, "Raisin pie! How delightful!" Her voice filled with both excitement and enthusiasm. She put the remainder of the pie back into the case, then glanced at the line of stools and tables. She picked a place at random and put one napkin, spoon, fork, and an empty coffee cup. The coffee pot filled one drip at a time. She could hear the sound of his footfalls growing louder. A twisted grin formed as the corners of her lips lifted gleefully. The fog would bring him here. He was coming to her, as they all did. The only thing to do now was wait. As Ned continued to walk, the fog swirled and made his skin itch. The longer he was in it, the more he thought, at times, it was electrified and shocking him in short bursts. It was changing him somehow. Then, as suddenly as it came, the fog cleared. Ned found himself standing in front of a sign, "Welcome to Redbud Springs, population 119. It seemed to Ned he'd been walking all night. The town was picturesque, its buildings well kept, no cars by the curbs, no trash littered the streets. Ned felt no wind, and the sound of nature had disappeared altogether. Yellow light gleamed from antique lampposts. The only building in town with its lights on inside was a place called Billings Pharmacy. Ned looked at his watch, 3:38 a.m. He wondered what a pharmacy was doing open at this time of night, but it didn't matter. He felt thirsty and needed a drink of water. To his surprise, when he looked in the window, a woman stood in the center of the dining room. She was busy setting tables and filling sugar containers. The checkered tablecloths were red and white. Her back was to him. As he entered the establishment, a bell jingled from an old piece of string hanging above the door. "Evening," she said. As she turned to face him, her face lighting up with delight, "Good evening. Take a seat anywhere you like." Ned walked to the bar stool and sat down. The place was empty. Everything was spotless. The woman walked behind the counter. The final drop of coffee fell into the coffee pot. She handed him a plate with a fresh slice of pie. Ned read the woman's name tag. Sue. Coffee came next. "Thank you," he said. She simply smiled. "My car broke down." "Well, sort of." "Then there was this crazy fog." "Try the pie, sugar." Ned made a mental note. Sue's eyes were kind, and she had crow's feet. Her lipstick was smudged at the right corner of her mouth. Ned looked down at the pie. It could have been made fresh from his grandmother's oven, made just for him when he was a little boy. The true test was in the taste. The fork cut the first bite. Ned's lips wet with anticipation. He lifted the fork to his mouth and smiled with delight in that first bite. Euphoria was immediate and reminiscent of a lifetime ago, of childhood wants and dreams, of endless possibilities. A world of memories rushed him back in time. All things which had been vanished in a haze of adulthood returned. In that moment, his problems with the broken-down rental car, dealing with daily drama from Stella, and life in general were gone. "Eat all your pie, sugar." Ned looked up at Sue, surprised. "I hadn't mentioned my name, had I?" "It doesn't matter when the pie's this good," his mind told him. He took another bite. The room was spinning. The walls wavered about him. "Finish your pie now, sugar," Sue urged him on. Her face seemed to shrink with delight when at last he took the last bite. The front door of Billings opened with an audible electronic chime which announced an arrival. State Trooper Willie Meeks let the door close, but looked up to see the new gadget. He missed the string and bell. Sue looked over at Willie. His uniform was new. The dull tan uniform was replaced by a dark blue, though his hair was still unkempt. Sue frowned. "Some things never change." "Like 'em, Sue?" "Sure do, Willie.
It's your ugly mug I'm tired of. Why in heaven's name didn't you tell me it was Ned? Willie asked. I know how you like to be surprised, Sue said. Willie took a seat next to Ned. Good to see you made it, Ned. Ned couldn't reply, but he saw Willie give Sue a knowing glance. They all do, Willie, said Sue.
No pie for me? You know the rules, Willie. Coffee then? Hey, I'm just a coffee-making kind of gal. She filled the cup and gave it to Willie. He sipped. It was the only thing of substance he had had in a long time. My arms lay on the countertop, heavy and motionless. What have they done to me? I felt a strong sense of danger, but I was helpless. I couldn't focus on anything. In the next moment, I felt arms pulling me off the stool. They were taking me to a swinging door leading somewhere. I wanted to run, but couldn't. Going through the door, we were instantly plunged into darkness. We stopped, and as they held me in place, a green light emerged from an unknown source and scanned my body. When it finished, we were back in darkness. Then a single red low wattage bulb above a door lit up. They led me to the door. Sue opened it, and I was placed inside on the floor. They left, closing the door.
Ned heard the click as the lock engaged. As far as he knew, he was alone. Then, hearing a sudden rustling of movement behind him, dry and brittle, then Ned saw him. As he moved against the wall, somehow a soft glow lit the man. It was slight at first, but seemed to become brighter. As he moved, Ned was horrified to see that the sound he'd heard was actually the man's skin against the floor and wall.
I told you not to come here, Ned.
You made the call? Ned trailed off.
I tried to warn you not to come here.
The old man's face was worn by the passage of life. Years had imprinted him with their accumulated pain. Anguish seemed to wash over him. Tears seeped past his thin eyelids. Ned looked at him intently. His eyes were my own. His features distorted, yet mine as well. He was me, but much older, and in his twilight years, and like a used battery of sorts, he was nearly spent. Then, suddenly, the man started to slump over. I reached for this older version of myself. When we touched, heat surged up my arm and into my body. I convulsed with the sudden impact. Our eyes locked on each other, yet we saw nothing. False memories were transferred, and my recollections were lost as I was rewritten. The people of Redbud Springs live not in a real existence, but one of a cohesive hive. When it was over, the older version of myself was gone. I was aware of the others. They were waiting, A new life emerged as Ned opened the door. It was not one of choice or of will. My mouth twisted upward in pleasure, the evil delight knowing Stella would be joining us next. In the collective, I saw one head of graying red hair. It shook in agitation. Sue joined me. We live in harmony, sugar, and so shall you. This concludes Never Seen Ned. Thank you for listening.